This is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for the week ending the 3rd of January 2020. Hello and welcome to the Winchester and District Talking Newspaper with extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle for the week ending the 3rd of January, which this week have been edited by Keith and Linda Vincent. And may we firstly wish a very happy and healthy new year to all our listeners. And your readers today are Nikki Baring.
Hello.
Norma York.
Hello.
And Andrew Parkinson.
Hello.
And I'm your presenter, Keith Vincent. And the main headlines this week, last bus to Micheldever, £15 million flats plan, and loved ones are remembered. So, Nikki, may we have the story behind the first headline, please?
Which was last bus to Micheldever. After 3 decades of taking passengers between Winchester and Micheldever, Mervyn's Coaches has been forced to end the route. The Winchester-based company ran its last bus on Monday from the Broadway. The services that have now been withdrawn include the 95, 95A, 96 and 96A, which also cover East Stratton. As previously reported, partner Joshua Annetts, grandson of owner Mervyn, said the whole company are upset about the difficult decision. "It has been going since 1986. We are part of the community. We still would like to do it for the community, as it keeps us in touch with the community. But it has become unviable for us to do it," Mr. Annetts said. And there's a lovely photograph of this rather old-fashioned bus with its cream and brown colouring.
15 million flats plan. A 15 million plan to build new homes on green spaces surrounding the high-rise flats on a Winchester estate has taken a step forward. The City Council has approved to go ahead with the public consultation and seek a contractor to build 75 homes on the land at Winnall Flats. Of those proposed, 72 would be one-bedroom flats and are said to help address the shortage of these kinds of accommodation in Winchester, with a further 3 houses. The plan would see green space around the existing flats removed to make way for the development. Councillor Kelsey Lerney, Cabinet Minister for Housing and Asset Management, said, "Residents have been consulted and kept informed of the council's plans. In particular, we have been keen to deal with the issues connected to parking and their obvious concerns about the impact of having a significant number of more housing units on site as well as how we can manage that going forward. Clearly, we will need to do more consultation. It is proposed that the authority will work with the Pocket Living, who specialise in affordable homes for local first-time buyers." Councillor Lerney continued, "We will be building the flats to the highest practical environmental standards. In addition, the 3 houses we are proposing, there is a potential opportunity to look at innovative methods of building low-carbon housing." Councillor Lerner added, "This is an exciting development." Councillor Hugh Lumby agreed, saying, "This was a proposal that started with the previous administration and I am delighted that it's been brought forward. I think it's a great scheme. I think the increased provision of accommodation for younger people and those making their first move onto the housing ladder is also excellent, and we need to be doing more of that. The current idea would see the existing road diverted around Craddock House. The new buildings would not be as high as the high rises, and there would be new landscaping south of the Craddock House, and the building would have green roofs. It says it realises that parking is a problem, with estate workers clogging the road during the day. It has done a survey to understand how the area is being used. The council has a target of 1,000 homes by 2028, recently increasing it from 600. A full business case for the proposal is expected to be brought back to the Cabinet in 2021. And there's an artist impression, which I won't even try to describe.
Loved ones are remembered. More than 100 people came together to remember and celebrate lost loved ones during Winchester Hospice's first Light Up a Life event. More than 150 people, including the Mayor, Councillor Eleanor Bell, attended the event, which took place in Royal Hampshire County Hospital, and brought together people who have experienced bereavement. As well as listening and singing carols and listening to readings, attendees dedicated lights on a Christmas tree to the life and memory of a loved one. The tree was then switched on by Michael Bridge, an ambassador of Winchester Hospice. Mr. Bridge said, "Seeing people with similar experiences come together to reflect and celebrate someone they love made it a really touching evening. I was honoured to be the person to turn on the lights. It represents a lot to so many people, and I hope that as a community, we continue to support each other and Winchester Hospice." Dedications were also added to a special book, which is now in the hospital chapel. The event raised more than £2,000. This will go towards converting Burrell House into Winchester Hospice, a place where patients at the end of their lives or living with a long-term illness will receive specialist care. The builders are now on site and preparations are being made for work to begin in January 2020, but the appeal needs to raise a further £1 million while the work is underway to reach the target needed to fund the work and to ensure the hospice can open. Judith Charmer from the Winchester Hospice fundraising team said, "I want to say a huge thank you to everyone who came along and supported our first Light Up a Life event and made it such an unforgettable evening, and the entire community who have supported us in 2019. Next year looks to be an exciting year for Winchester Hospice as we get closer to opening the doors and being able to care for those at the end of their lives and supporting their families. We wouldn't have got this far without the tremendous support of the local community, and I hope you will help us on our journey in 2020 so that we can be there for the community for years to come. To donate or find out how else to get involved, visit winchesterhospice.com." And the article is accompanied by a couple of photographs. One shows the team, including the Lady Mayor, Councillor Eleanor Bell, attending the switch on of the lights, and also a computer-generated image of the proposed hospice at Burrell House.
Thank you. That concludes the headlines. Now we continue with the death announcements. Then Christian comment, letters, historical items, chronicle comment, first person and Belgarum. So we start with the death announcements this week. Birch, Christine Birch, who died peacefully on the 10th of December. Cokes, David John Cokes in Countess Mountbatten Hospice on the 16th of December, aged 68. Coffin, Ernest Charles Coffin, died peacefully at home on the 11th of December, aged 93. Collins, James Benjamin Collins, died on the 16th of December, aged 94. Elkins, Derek Francis Elkins, died on the 18th of December at Brendan Care Nursing Home, aged 70. Johnson, Edward Stanley Johnson OBE, died on the 13th of December, aged 85. Kent, Raymond Frank Kent, died suddenly on the 2nd of December, aged 75. Markham, Margot Markham, died suddenly on the 25th of December in Royal Hampshire County Hospital, aged 80. McKenna, Claire McKenna, died peacefully on the 20th of December. Morehouse, Edgar Colin Morehouse, died peacefully on the 19th of December, aged 81. Watson, Hugh Watson, a long-time cathedral guide from Winchester, died at home on the 14th of December, aged 87. Windibank, Gwenlyn Windibank, died peacefully in the Royal Hampshire County Hospital, aged 86. And Woods, David John Woods, died on the 11th of December, aged 81. And now we have a Christian comment, please.
This is entitled 2020 Vision. It's easy for Christians to be a bit sniffy about New Year. After all, we're already a few weeks ahead because traditionally we start our New Year on Advent Sunday, around December the 1st. Our year has already included Christmas, soon comes Epiphany, and then Lent, Easter, Ascension, Pentecost, All Saints, and to end again in November with the Feast of Christ the King. Also, we are only just over halfway through Christmas. January the 1st is only the 8th of the 12 days. In former times, we would still have been sending and receiving presents. Probably, I grant you, your true love did not send you 8 maids of milking yesterday. But even if the presents are all unwrapped, we don't need to put Christmas behind us too quickly. There's also a trap which New Year's resolutions set for us. They suggest to us all that we need to do to improve our lives is to just try harder, to want it more. We can be more organized, live a healthier life, achieve more if we just resolve to do so. Yet that seems naive. I know my own habits, good and bad, are part of my whole pattern of living. This includes what I value and prioritize, how I deal with past events in my life, and most deeply, my sense of identity and of who I really am. If we want to develop a 2020 vision of our lives, individually and in community across this city and nation and world, we need to think more deeply. The 12 days of Christmas end with the Epiphany, the dramatic revelation of Jesus, the newborn king, to all the peoples of the world. This was symbolized by the arrival in Bethlehem of the wealthy Zoroastrian priests, or Magi, fulfilling the prophecy that, as the good news of Christ was proclaimed throughout the world, excuse me, all kings would fall down and worship him. In the fullness of time, this happened in many nations, including our own. If we want to make new resolutions, this should be done in the light of God's love as shown in Jesus. What light does he shine on our values and priorities? What does our past mean to him? Who do we believe we are in relation to him? The answers are more about accepting God's love for us than resolving to try harder. Firstly, we are, or can be, forgiven people. God in Christ wants to be reconciled with us, forgiving us all that is past when we confess it to him. Secondly, we are, or need to be, forgiving people, prepared by God's grace to break cycles of revenge and wrongdoing in our relationships. Thirdly, we are, or are called to be, lights in the world, whose lives, lived in all fullness and all grace, shine in reflection of God's glory. God's call to each of us is to new life in Christ, forgiven and forgiving, and living life in all its fullness. How about that for 2020 vision? And that was submitted by the Reverend Philip Crinks, who is the priest in charge of St. Faith's Parish in Winchester.
Thank you. Now we move on to letters to the editor. Nikki, I think you've got the first letter.
DJ thanked from Penny Stewart. Sir, I would like to say a huge thank you to Julian Clegg, who has just retired from BBC Radio Solent after many years on The Breakfast Show. He has been a great champion of his listeners and is fair and impartial. He's one of the good guys of the world. I'm sure there are many readers of the Hampshire Chronicle who have listened to Radio Solent over the years who will want to join me in wishing Julian a very happy retirement and to wish both him and his wife Carolyn all the best for the future. And that from Penny Stewart, Saxon Road, Hyde, Winchester.
MP returned. Sir, congratulations to Steve Brine on being re-elected as our MP, chronicled December the 19th. To win Winchester constituency four times is a huge achievement, but despite reduced majority, I think this win is his best yet, given the money and resources thrown at this seat. This time, the election return of the Liberal Democrats will be keenly read. And despite the attempts to muzzle Green voters through the disastrous Remain alliance, how ironic that this has led to a forest of leaflets from the Lib Dems and a widespread tactical voting. We made up our own minds and opted to keep a well-respected constituency MP. I hope everyone, however they voted, will wish Steve well as he returns to Westminster for the new term, where I know he will represent us all. And that's from Peter Walker, Field Close, Compton.
And this letter was submitted by Jeff Naylor. Wants over needs. Sir, two prominent religious leaders' Christmas messages this year encourage people to reject darkness. There is certainly a need for a new enlightenment. It seems to me as if humanity is suffering from mass Stockholm syndrome, whereby consumerism is the captor and advertising is the bond. The syndrome is marked not only by a positive bond between captive and captor, but also by a negative attitude on behalf of the captive towards authorities who threaten the captor-captive relationship. Much of the world's current malaise is due to this insidiousness, which has moved the economy away from prioritizing human needs to that of wants. However, there is a dawning of hope in France, with some cities trying to ban public adverts. Dawn in France comes just before sunrise in Britain. And that was submitted by Jeff Naylor of Birch Close, Colne Common.
And this from Simon Lever, headed Some Positivity. Sir, much has been aired regarding the carbon footprint, vehicular pollution, in Winchester city centre, where parking is an everyday necessity, chronicled December 19. Viable solutions, short and medium term, can be daunting with a catch-22 scenario, balancing enterprise and environmental improvement. People still need to access the city centre, and park and ride or the excellent bus service are not always appropriate. In recent months, I have suggested potentially viable ideas, but reliant on the technological prowess of the country. Introducing dedicated bicycle paths can be challenging when applied to an historic city such as Winchester. However, should it be feasible to create decent bicycle parking facilities as close as possible, this would be a beginning. Where could real Dutch-style bicycle paths be applied? What about electric scooters, although they can be speedy? The other aspect is motor cars, taxis and ultimately buses. It cannot be beyond the inventiveness of technology gurus to build into car and bus roofs with solar panels. These could be applied when in the city, thus reducing the carbon footprint. Electric vehicles could also benefit from such technology. Let us apply some positivity, maintain Winchester's popularity as a business centre, e.g. rail link, and reduce pollution, not only by banning cars, but providing alternatives that are an incentive. From Simon Lever, Juniper Close, Badger Farm, Winchester.
And another letter from Simon Lever on a completely different note. Spirit of Christmas. Sir, thanks to the inspiration of Debbie Deeney, originator of the Chat Tea Cafe at the Badger Farm Community Centre, the Christmas Day lunch for those alone or elderly was an outstanding success. The mission to address those in need of company on Christmas Day is admirable, to say the least. Volunteers include Debbie's family, dedicated time on Christmas Day in an act of selfless giving, empathising naturally and engaging with guests. extending a genuine welcome to folk who would normally be alone on the most celebrated, assured the event would not only be rewarding, but a manifestation of Christmas spirit. The night shelter also provided transport and gifts for a number of people, some of whom may attend the next Chat Tea Cafe on Monday, January the 27th, between 2 and 4pm. On behalf of the volunteers who prepared lunch, served and engaged with the guests in a true celebration of Christmas Day, we thank you, Debbie, for your dedication and enthusiasm in making a positive difference to people's lives. And Simon Lever, Juniper Close, Winchester.
And this is a very timely letter from Emma Bowman, who's Barnardo's South East Regional Director in London. Unwanted gifts. Sir, while Santa has delivered many children the presents they've been dreaming of this Christmas, many adults say they have received gifts they don't want and will never use, according to a new survey by Barnardo's. This is why we've launched a new campaign asking people to consider donating their unwanted festive gifts to their local Barnardo's charity shop. A YouGov survey by Barnardo's of adults who receive gifts at Christmas found that 47% said they received unwanted gifts last year, with novelty items, such as humorous gifts, being the main culprit for 59% of people. The survey also revealed that the majority of these gifts are left gathering dust, with more than a third of UK adults, about 36%, saying they put these gifts in a cupboard and never use them. Donating to Barnardo's stores means that somebody else can find joy in any unwanted gifts. It also helps Barnardo's to bring care, hope, and love to vulnerable children across the UK at Christmas and all year round. To find your local store, please visit www.barnardos.org.uk.
Thank you. That concludes the letters. Now we're going to step back in time. I'm going to start with a very small piece from 200 years ago. On Monday, January the 3rd, 1820, the Dean and Chapter of Winchester, in addition to their usual donation of coals, have given up to 50 of the poorest and most deserving families of this city either blankets or sheets as the necessities of the case required. The great severity of the season renders this charity particularly well-timed and beneficial.
And 100 years ago, Saturday, January the 3rd, 1920. On Christmas Eve, about 10:30, an awful fire broke out in a toy and confectioner's shop in the Hundred, kept by Mr. J. Hiscock, who resided for many years in Winchester before going to Rumsey. It took an unusual time for the fire brigade to get to the scene, and then they were hampered by a lot of would-be helpers. The whole house became like a raging furnace, and so much so that the houses on either side of the street were either damaged or in danger of catching fire. And a second article. Christmastide in Winchester partook more of pre-war characteristics, though memories of all that has happened since the Christmas of 1913 are too fresh to expect that any community would desire, even if it could, to give itself up to unrestrained mirth and jollity.
And 50 years ago, on Saturday, January the 3rd, 1970, two items. Centenarian Mr. Frederick Shepherd of Carnbrae, Firsdown Road, Kingsombourne, the designer of Sir Alec Rose's round-the-world yacht Lively Lady, died at his home on Sunday. Mr. Shepherd, who was 100 in June 1969, was a prolific designer of yachts, and on his birthday he received a traditional telegram from the Queen, as well as greetings from many friends and Sir Alec and Lady Rose. Sir Alec's book, Mr. Shepherd was described as a well-known English architect of cruising yachts. The son of a marine engineer, he was born at Southampton and educated at Taunton's Grammar School. And the second item is, nearly 20% more defendants were committed to Hampshire Quarter Sessions for trial or sentence in 1969 than in the previous. Sir Eustace Rosekill, the Sessions chairman, told magistrates on Tuesday, In 1968, the figure was 586. Last year, it was 696. There is therefore an increase of 110, a figure of 19% increase in a single year, said Sir Eustace. It is indeed a nightmare to see how this work can be got through with the present resources.
And more recently, just 25 years ago, on Friday, December the 30th, 1994, a couple of articles. Sales fever gripped Winchester on Tuesday morning, with hundreds of shoppers out early to snap up bargains at shops and stores in the High Street and the Brooks Shopping Centre. Queues are forming outside many of the High Street shops as early as 7 a.m. Several stores report a drop in Christmas sales this year, but all report a bigger-than-ever sales rush. Marks & Spencer's manager, Mark Forrest, said there was a slow start to the Christmas shopping. It came late this year, but when it did, and when it did come, it was absolutely phenomenal. "Our Christmas sales are much better than last year," he said. His customers were still buying Christmas presents on Tuesday morning. The fastest lines on Tuesday morning were the Christmas gift lines, and after that, the sale bargains in the clothes departments took over, he said. Brooks Centre Services Manager Bob Mooney said Christmas shopping was pretty good this year. "I wouldn't say it was spectacular, but considering the current economic climate, it was not at all bad," he said. Tuesday got off to a good start, with plenty of people milling around looking for bargains. Debenham store manager Tessa Manley reported queues outside both High Street entrances, waiting for their 8:30 a.m. opening. And if I can pass a comment, that's interesting how one could compare that 25 years ago to today's environment. The second article is Marwell Zoo has assured the public that they are not in danger after a Winchester man claimed he saw a puma maul a deer yards from his home last Thursday. "These cats will shy away from people. The only person this guy saw this one would be because it was hungry," said Nicky Hart, secretary to the curators at Marwell. "If anyone sees a puma, they should leave it alone," she added. Ron Kirby, 46, saw the attack as he was walking his neighbour's dog outside his home in Chandler Road, Abbots Barton, at 5 p.m. "I saw a deer running very fast towards me along the track, and I realized that he was being chased by a large cat. As he came closer, I saw it was a puma. I was very surprised. It's not the kind of thing you expect to see every day. When it got about 25 yards away, it dived onto the deer's back and knocked it to the ground," he said. Mr. Kirby returned to his house, rang the police, and grabbed two torches. The police later arrived with a gamekeeper who was instructed to shoot the deer.
Thank you. Now we come back to the present. Nikki, I think you've got editorial chronicle comment. Thank you.
I'm still reeling from the puma and the deer and the gamekeeper. This is quite exciting. Okay, editorial comment. Welcome news for housing in the city. Good news to start the new year. Progress is being made on the £15 million plan to build new homes in Winnell. The City Council is proposing 75 homes on the open space surrounding the four tower blocks, Braxton, Craddock, Dennett and Earl. A formal public consultation will be held soon. This is very good news. The Council is aiming to construct small properties to meet the shortage of such accommodation in the city. Both political parties, the Conservatives and the Liberal Democrats, are to be applauded for striving hard to meet their ambitious target of 1,000 affordable homes by 2028. The increasing gentrification of Winchester into a solely middle-class enclave of commuters must be resisted. There will be opposition in Winnell at the loss of open space, which is largely unused, but the benefits more than outweigh the losses. Elsewhere, there was mixed news for Micheldever. Monday saw the last running of the bus service, making the village even more remote. But at least the Half Moon and Spread Eagle pub has been reopened.
Thank you. Now we have first person, Norma.
The Honesty of Mothers by Joanna Lewis. Over the course of 2019, I've come to love this newspaper even more. We all probably have a favourite section. I live for Andrew Lester's Nature Roundup and the History page. This year we've had some particularly fruity letters to the editor, bristling with common sense, outrage, polite hatred, informed opinion, and the glorious randomness. There's a PhD on the Brexit correspondence alone. A regional newspaper is worth its weight in gold. Quality, independent journalism is not just the first draft of history. It's the first line of defence against local corruption and the abuse of power. We must treasure and support it throughout the turbulent 2020s because it supports us. However, I especially love the Hampshire Chronicle at this time of year, for in contrast to the national daily papers, you won't have to look at pictures of Pippa Middleton cavorting in a micro bikini. Who, like me, post-Christmas Day, was frayed to unravelling? I was smothered in a cold, driven mad from tracing e-vouchers lost in the ether, reduced to rummaging through the bins in a dressing gown to retrieve receipts ravaged by turkey giblets and satsuma peel. I had no hope of fitting into a party trousers unless I wanted my internal organs rearranged. And what did I have to get me through the day? The image of Carol Middleton's mother and younger daughter in a turquoise sea without care, stretch marks, love handles, muffin top, or normal-sized boobs between them. The daily papers have no sense of timing. What's the good of covering stories after the festive period that have headlines like half the adults over 45 have waistlines that are considered far too fat? Talk about closing the stable door after the horse has bolted, or more accurately, shutting the recently enlarged gate so the cart horse can stagger towards the industrial feeder. I needed that headline months ago. How many of us are reading that statistics wearing an Xmas jumper like a lagged tank after consuming half a packet of Stollen and a jug of Bailey's for breakfast? We should, of course, marvel at the Middleton midriffs. No doubt many of us will be making resolutions to be beach body ready, even if in another life. Hopefully, we'll be smart and size up our most effective, realistic options, like more walking, tackling weight loss with friends, with fun or with a charity event in mind. Carol and Pippa also remind us that it's not just about having good genes. Intergenerational support can help too. In fact, they made me reminisce about the time I went to a health farm with my mother. Not blessed with Mrs. Lewis's self-control, it was decided I needed help, kick-started by 3 days in a Devon health farm with Mum's moral support. Believe me, dear reader, such measures are not effective. I spent the first day trying to escape the music. Every room and hallway was either a rainforest at dawn, a monsoon, or a Peruvian panpipe fest. Is it that relaxing to listen to a man wailing who sounds like Andy Williams being thrown off a cliff? The second day, I took every exercise class that was free, in between being smeared with seaweed whilst wearing plastic pants. The third day, I had a migraine and ended up being sick into a pot plant. As I paid before leaving, I caught sight of myself in one of the large gilt mirrors. I was pale, I had a full body rash from the seaweed, also I had tripped and fallen in the brambles on a power walk, so my face was scratched down one side. I turned to my mother and said, "I have just spent a load of money to look like a bag of..." hoping to be contradicted. "Yes, you have," she said. "And that's what we need moving forward. Someone or something to keep telling us the truth. Happy New Year, Hoglets."
Thank you. Now we've got all Belgarum's alternative look at the news. Thank you, Andrew.
And I hope you all enjoyed Norma's reading of that as much as we did. She All her theatrical expertise came to the fore in that. She thoroughly enjoyed it. Belgarum this week, we've actually had a couple of comments already about the bus service, and Belgarum picks up on that as well. And this is based on a couple of photographs, and the photographs are separated by 25 years. So the first photograph is a black and white Hampshire Chronicle photograph showing Mervyn Annetts and Linda Porter launching the bus service in the autumn of 1986. So there are, I'm sure they probably won't mind saying this, there were a couple youngsters in those days back in 86. The colour one, which is the second photograph, also by the Chronicle, shows the pair in 2011 as Mervyn's coaches reach the silver jubilee of running the Mitchell Dever to Winchester route. Alas, at the end of this month, the service will be no more. Years of losses has meant that the company is no longer able to continue the service. Belgarum will miss the near-vintage bus on its service, usually with hardly anyone on board, and salutes the firm for carrying on long after simple economics made it advisable to stop. Most people can drive, but some cannot, and they will be the losers.
Thank you. Now we move on to the announcements, and we start with What's On. And the Chronicle has listed some of the forthcoming shows in 2020 that are being held at the Theatre Royal. We've highlighted a few for you, and the full information on the Theatre Royal programme for 2020 can be obtained from the box office on 01962 840 440. That's 01962 840 440. But there's just a couple of things we'll highlight. On January the 31st, we have a comedy string quartet called Graffiti Classics. On February the 1st and 2nd, there's a stage adaptation of Raymond Briggs' The Bear. And then in April, they're also doing Raymond Briggs' The Tiger Who Came to Tea. On February the 3rd and 4th, there's a comedy from the stand-up comic Alexei Sale. And February the 28th to the 29th, The Black Veil, which is a drama based on Charles Dickens' Victorian thriller about a mysteriously veiled elderly woman who begs a newly qualified doctor to visit a nameless patient, only for the doctor to become embroiled in a web of lies, deceit, and that ends in death. So that's the brief roundup of What's On. As I say, full details can be obtained from the theatre box office on 01962 840 440. Now, lighting up time ends Friday the 3rd of January at 08:08 a.m. and begins at 4:11 p.m. And on Wednesday the 8th of January, it ends at 8:06 a.m. and begins at 4:17 p.m. And if you know someone who's sight impaired or would like to receive our recordings, or if you have any problem with the recording you've received from us, please telephone Mary Davis on 01962 711 998. And now we continue with items of general news, Nikki.
And to follow on from the editor's comment, threatened pub reopens after two villagers buy it. A village pub that was saved from developers after residents came together to purchase and transform it has served its first pint after reopening. Excuse me. It all started off when Mitchell Dever saw the closure of its shop and the community began to search for a place to open the village staple. Charles Holden, who has been involved in the pub project, said, "The village has not had a shop for probably 3 years now, and many avenues had been pursued, all of which proved fraught with difficulties and non-viable. We reached the stage where we weren't going to have a community shop. And then the pub chain Green King put the Half Moon and Spread Eagle up for sale in September 2018, and two residents who wished to remain anonymous came together to buy the pub. We were worrying about a shop, and then this pub came up. It was quite a challenge to see it come on the market," Charles said. Two gentlemen in the village could see the potential and were keen to see that it wasn't sold to developers and stepped forward and put in an offer. The pub's rescue was made possible after the parish council applied for the building to be listed as an asset of community value. A community benefit society was set up, and around 40 local people spent hours volunteering to transform the pub, from repairing furniture to painting walls and cleaning. "It has been amazing. It is very clear that the village wants a pub, and they want to make it happen. It has proved the value of what we are trying to achieve. We haven't just got a community pub, but a community hub to bring people together that haven't had the opportunity to have social intercourse. And Richard Viracott, who has also spearheaded the drive, said it is for the village, by the village. We never expected to end up with a pub, and the pub is going to let us have a shop. Plans are already being drawn up to create space within the footprint of the site to open a shop, with villagers discussing the venture.
Have a say on the future of Hampshire libraries. A public consultation over the future of Hampshire libraries is to be launched next month. County bosses have confirmed that details over the future of libraries across the county will be released on January the 9th, when a 10-week consultation will be launched. It comes after last month's county councillor Peter Chegwin claimed that 37 of the 52 libraries in Hampshire could face axe. At the time, the county council said it would not be appropriate to speculate. But now the authority has said that it is not and never has been considering closing 37 libraries. Further details of the vision for the Hampshire libraries to 2025 will be revealed next month. As previously reported, the proposals came as the authority aims to save 1.75 million from the library sector by 2021 in a move that would put 58 jobs at risk. Councillor Sean Woodward, Executive Member for Recreation and Heritage, said this represents 16% of the overall budget for the service, but still means that a budget of around 10 million would remain. He added, "The consultation, which we will be publicising to Hampshire residents and stakeholders, will reveal the emerging vision for Hampshire libraries to 2025. This will be used alongside implementing efficiency measures and a drive to maximise income through events and room hire. We will also be seeking residents' and library staff's views on different ways of providing library services, with options including reductions in opening hours and the possibility of a small number of library closures or relocations. I want to be clear that we are absolutely committed to ensuring that Hampshire residents have access to high-quality library services. Hampshire County Council is not and has never has been considering closing 37 of our libraries. The consultation form will be available online and in libraries from midday on January the 9th.
Expansion backed for the Black Rat. Winchester's only Michelin star restaurant has been given permission to expand. Owner of the Black Rat, David Nicholson, submitted plans for a two-story rear extension to house more diners and a modern kitchen. At a city council planning committee meeting on December the 18th, the plans were unanimously approved. Mr. Nicholson's architect, Hugh Thomas, said the restaurant has gone from strength to strength since it opened 11 years ago. He added, "The Black Boy's story is that of a typical English eccentric. The business expands every time he, that is Mr. Nicholson, does something new. He has the only Michelin star restaurant in the city, which has a lot of restaurants. So he has done incredibly well to come this far. This expansion is needed to get further." The application did not receive any objections from the public, but did from Winchester City Council's Historic Environment Department. A statement said, "The extensions would be visually complex in their built form, in contrast to the simple form of the listed building, and would be visually dominant, particularly from Wharf Hill, as it fails to follow both the natural ground levels in the area and the established hierarchy of the component parts of the listed building. As such, it would appear alien and incongruous, resulting in harm to the significance and historic appearance of the Black Rat and the character and appearance of the surrounding conservation area." However, this was disputed by a number of committee members, including Councillor Patrick Cunningham. He said, I think it's a vast improvement to the area, and I applaud the creativity of the owner and the architect. It will enhance the area and restaurant trade in the city. Councillor Mike Reed suggested the colour of the extension should be changed. He said it could stick out like a sore thumb if white material is used. Planning officers will now work with Mr. Nicholson to agree on materials, a condition established at the end of the committee debate. And this is accompanied by an artist's impression of how the extension of the Black Rat restaurant could look.
A baby, the perfect Christmas present. Christmas is a special time of year, and for those parents, it will forever have an added significance. In Winchester's maternity unit, Lynn Sullivan bonded with son Avery. According to the yoga instructor from Eastleigh, the name Avery means elf lord. Then Robert John Wright was born at the same ward at the Royal Hampshire County Hospital to parents Sophie and Connor. Reggie Tommy Sheldon was born on Christmas Day to first-time mum Daisy Shaw. The 25-year-old was told by doctors she only had a 4% chance of ever conceiving a child. The care worker from Sholing had surgery for polycystic ovary syndrome earlier this year, then just months later was delighted to learn she was pregnant. Daisy said, "It's such an overwhelming feeling. Reggie is a little Christmas pudding, and I'm so happy with him." Meanwhile, Nicola and Adam Exley from Hedge End celebrated the birth of their second daughter. She was the first baby to be born on Christmas Day at the Princess Anne Hospital Maternity Unit in Southampton, coming into the world at 12:30 a.m. And there are photographs of the various mothers and their babies. Obviously quite pleased to get that over with.
Artist Jill still going strong at the age of 95. Most 95-year-olds are probably sat with their feet up enjoying a quieter pace of life. But for Jill Jennings, she's out and about pursuing her hobby. Often found outside in the summer months or in her studio, Jill, who lives in the centre of Alsford, exhibits her work at least three times a year. She has been a member of the Alsford Art Society since 1995, having arrived in the town the previous year, and she was a member of the committee and treasurer for 9 years. She has also been a member of the New Road Artists since that time. Jill has always painted in an abstract way and in recent years has developed a very recognisable style in mixed media. She creates collages based on the rocks of her beloved Guernsey, taking the initial shapes and planes that she sees, using them to create images of great depth. Born and raised in Adelaide, she trained as a thoracic physiotherapist in 1951. She achieved her lifelong dream of visiting the UK to visit relations in Guernsey. Having returned to the UK towards the end of the 50s, she decided that she did not want to continue her career in physio, and a chance meeting with a BBC TV newsreader led to a job in Broadcasting House. From then on, she had a variety of jobs, including 2 years in a Mayfair art gallery, interspersed with visits to Australia until she retired. She also took a course in history of art at London University and was able to spend more time painting. Jill tries to get back to the island twice a year, and it was on one of her visits to St. Peterport that she attended a lecture given by Anthony Gormley. He was on the island to supervise the installation of his Insider's cast iron sculpture on the castle cornet, and she bumped into him the next day while out sketching. To Jill's delight, he invited her to sit with him and they discussed his work at length. "My mother was a good watercolourist and I've painted since I was a child," said Jill. "After I stopped being a physio, I did contemplate going to art school, but lost my nerve. I would paint every day if I could, and now feel that I have found my niche and will continue as long as I am able to pick up a pen or a paintbrush." Jill will be exhibiting her paintings in July. And there's a picture of Jill Jennings carrying out a hobby, sat in front of her easel with her paintbrush in hand, looking very dapper.
A school partnership scheme has been shortlisted for a national award. St. Swithin School in Winchester has been shortlisted for a prestigious Times Educational Supplement Independent School Award in the Independent State School Partnership category. St. Swithin's has been recognised for developing a significant and sustainable primary schools enrichment programme. Judges were also impressed by the school for delivering a range of activities that positively impacts the lives of over 500 local primary school pupils every year from its partner schools. Every week, 150 children from five local primary schools take part in science, maths, French, drama, art, and reading with St. Swithin's pupils and staff. In addition, St. Swithin's provides 35 hours of free swimming pool use, tuition, and transport to and from the pool every week, saving each of the participating primary schools an average of £3,000. Excuse me. Some 180 pupils and 15 staff from St. Swithin's are involved in the partnership initiative, delivering 170 hours of enrichment activities to the primary children and positively improving their own collaborative and creative skills, confidence and concern for wider society. The impact on St. Swithin's pupils is measured against the values, attitudes and attributes which are pillars of its high-performance learning program. The Independent State School Partnership has led to the formation of a primary school science hub. Spearheaded by Head of Science at St. Swithin's, the hub aims to share resources and thus enhance the delivery of science teaching in primary schools. One of its first innovations is Science in a Suitcase, a pack including equipment, materials and teaching resources, which is loaned to local primary schools. St. Swithin's headmistress, Jane Gandee, said, "The most important outcome of our partnership's work is the positive impact on the children in our local primary schools and the indirect benefits to our own pupils. However, it is very rewarding for our pupils and staff involved with the program to be recognized by the TES Awards, and we look forward to finding out who is the overall winner in February." And this is accompanied by a photograph of some of the children at St. Swithin's working with one of their teachers running a science activity.
Trinity Christmas Lunch. More than 100 people enjoyed Christmas lunch at the Trinity Centre in Winchester. 100 clients, staff, trustees and volunteers were served turkey with all the trimmings, with desserts provided by Rick Stein Restaurant on the High Street. Everyone received an individually gift-wrapped present donated by businesses, churches, schools and local people. Sue McKenna, Chief Executive, said, "We would like to send a heartfelt thanks to the Winchester community for supporting us throughout 2019 and really making a difference to the lives of many. We have been overwhelmed by the generosity and sheer goodwill from local businesses, churches and councils, BID, many partner organisations and the public. There has been a real interest in homelessness this year. There are many reasons why people can fall upon tough times. We really appreciate your support. We genuinely could not provide our services without it. This year, the Trinity has plans for flats up to 12 people in a new development under one roof at Trinity Project at the back of its base at Durngate. The two photographs, one of five of the volunteers, all with their aprons on and vast saucepans of parsnips, roast potatoes, well, about to be roasted, carrots and a bucket of sprouts. I wouldn't like to peel those. And a very pretty Christmas tree with more presents than I would have believed possible piled around it."
Home holds art show to showcase residents' artwork. Sunrise of Winchester hosted an art exhibition to showcase residents' artwork. Their care home on Stockbridge Road recently put on the show and craft fair to highlight the artistic talent of the residents. On Friday, December the 6th, Deputy Mayor of Winchester, Councillor Patrick Cunningham, opened the exhibition for VIPs, which included residents and their families. Following this, over the weekend, members of the public were invited to enjoy the exhibition at the community's very own craft fair. 30 pieces of artwork were specially created by residents in their regular art group. Louise Merkin, activities coordinator at Sunrise Winchester, said, "To see the residents overcome personal challenges and learn new techniques week after week is so rewarding. I'm so proud of all the hard work the residents have put into the exhibition. You'd be surprised by how many residents didn't know how to paint before moving to Sunrise." Derek Hatton, a resident at the Sunrise of Winchester community, was so inspired by the exhibition that he has joined the art group. "Artworks are just one of the many weekly activities enjoyed by the residents at Sunrise. Residents can also get involved in Zumba, armchair exercise, music circle groups and lots more." And there are three pictures. There's the Deputy Mayor with Sunrise staff, and there's a picture of some of the paintings and the residents admiring the artwork on display. And the third one is the Deputy Mayor meeting the residents.
And this is a warning about cold calls. Police have issued a warning to residents over a new cold caller scam. Hampshire Trading Standards has received several alarming reports where people have been approached by cold callers offering to do roofing or drainage work. Attempts have been made to get the resident to pay using their bank card, and a handheld device has been produced into which the resident puts their bank card and PIN. In other cases, the residents have been told that they are due compensation for any inconvenience, which can be put back onto their bank card using the handheld device. Once the callers have the bank card and PIN details, they have gone on to withdraw unauthorised amounts from the residents' accounts. It would also appear that handheld devices may also have been recording the PIN numbers entered by the resident. Although the incidents reported so far involve roofing and drainage work, other home improvement sectors may also be used as a method of getting card and PIN details. Now, Trading Standards are warning the public to be vigilant and never pay or accept refunds from cold callers using handheld bank card payment machines. Traders who agree work at the home of an individual or at a place other than their usual business premises are required by law to provide consumers with a notice of right to cancel, which gives a 14-day cooling-off period from the date the work starts. Even if work has started, there is still a legal right to cancel, although some payment may be required for materials. To inform Trading Standards about traders offering services where false claims are suspected, report the matter to its partners at the Citizen Advice Consumer Helpline on 03454 040 506.
New MP steps down as PCC candidate. The Conservative Party is set to select a new Police and Crime Commissioner candidate. Flick Drummond, the newly elected MP for Meon Valley, had been selected as the Conservative Police and Crime Commissioner candidate ahead of next May's election. But now she has confirmed that she's no longer the party's candidate and that there will be a new selection soon. It comes after Ms. Drummond was elected as the Member of Parliament for Meon Valley. Following the general election, she told the Local Democracy Reporting Service that she is no longer a PCC candidate. A new selection is expected to be held soon, but a date has not been revealed yet. Councillor Dan Fitzhenry, leader of the Conservatives in Southampton, said, "I've known Flick for a couple of years and we were looking forward to working with her, but I'm very pleased that she's got a new job and we look forward to working with the new candidates and to selecting the best one to be our candidate for May's election." As previously reported, Ms. Drummond was elected as the party's PCC candidate earlier this year after party members did not re-select current PCC Michael Lane. At the time, Councillor Fitzhenry said party members had decided to open the field to new candidates. Ms. Drummond, who is a former Portsmouth South MP, celebrated a landslide victory on December the 12th when she won the Meon Valley seat with 35,271 votes. She nearly increased the majority of 25,632 secured by the former MP, Sir George Hollingbury, who'd stood down in November.
College refuses gift in a race row. Winchester College has turned down gifts of £800,000 for scholarships for poor white students after claiming it would be discriminatory. Sir Brian Thwaites, 96, wanted to leave money to the City College and Dulwich College because he had attended both on scholarships. The money was to help poor white students because research has shown that they are amongst the lowest achievers in education. But it is claimed his offer was refused over fears of breaking equality laws. Sir Brian told a national newspaper, if Cambridge University can accept a much larger donation in support of black students, why cannot I do the same for underprivileged white British? Winchester said it would harm its reputation by accepting my bequest, but in my opinion it would gain enormously by being seen to address what is the severe national problem of the underperforming white cohorts in school. The former leading university professor and chairman of local health authorities, formerly of Winchester, wanted to give £800,000 to Winchester and £400,000 to Dulwich in South London. A spokesman for Winchester College said, the school, in common with many universities, has outreach schemes aimed at carefully selected and underrepresented communities. These schemes operate successfully and are regularly reviewed. The school will continue to discuss with benefactors the effective delivery of their intentions, but the trustees are clear, having consulted widely, that acceptance of a bequest of this nature would neither be in the interests of the school as a charity or the specific interests of those it aims to support through its work. Notwithstanding legal exceptions to the relevant legislation, the school does not see how discrimination on grounds of a boy's colour would ever be compatible with its values. However, former head of Commission for the Racial Equality, Trevor Phillips, sees nothing wrong with the donation. He says the need to help deprived white boys is correct.
And a choir concert has just raised £4,000 for some local charities. Excuse me. A local, highly successful choir has raised almost £4,000 at their recent sell-out charity Christmas concert. The Winchester Fusion Choir, under the leadership of Marie O'Brien, held their performance at St. Peter's and English Martyrs Roman Catholic Church on Jury Street, where the audience were warmly welcomed by Father Tom McGrath. The singers participated in a wide-ranging and eclectic programme of songs and Christmas music, a highlight being Carl Jenkins' Adiemus, sung in four parts, and Driving Home for Christmas. The 70-strong choir's beautiful renditions were interspersed with poetry, composed and performed by Sheila North, small group ensembles, and soloists. A total of £3,800 was shared between four local charities: Rose Road Association, the GOLD Gold Charity, Friends of the Family, and St. Vincent de Paul Society. Beth Rogers of the Rose Road Association said, "The choir sang beautifully, and it was lovely to see just how much of your community your choir really is." Viv Wheeler, a trustee of Friends of the Family, responded, "Your inspiration and talent shone through your choir, who clearly loved to sing and gave everyone such an entertaining evening." The impressive amount, or an impressive amount, of over £1,400 was raised alone from the raffle. Star prizes being a Guy Kramer or Guy Kramer makeover and a glider flight around the Isle of Wight. The choir were delighted to welcome the Mayor of Winchester, Eleanor Bell, and her escort husband, Alex, who were happy to attend and draw the winning raffle tickets. And this is accompanied by a photograph of the choir with their leader there, and they're all looking fine fettle.
Happy New Year, Eco Bargains, and help to save the planet. A very happy New Year to you all. It is the time of year when the eagle-eyed bargain hunter will be hitting the shops in Portsmouth, Southampton and Winchester in search of a really good deal. For my sins, I admit I have just had an afternoon in West Quay, seeking some new shoes and a new shirt for 2020. But how often do we pause and consider the impact of what we buy on the planet? And what are the alternatives to purchasing branded or cut-price clothes in the shops? A few weeks ago, I bought a pair of trousers from India, albeit from what looked like a sustainable source. India is one of three Asian countries that exports huge quantities of cotton and semi-finished cotton clothes to Europe and the USA. The water consumed by cotton manufacturing in India would be enough to supply every person, 1.3 billion, in the country with 100 litres of water every day for a full year. It is incredibly easy to forget that water in clothes manufacturing consumes vast quantities of water. According to the Water Footprint Network, just 1 kilo of cotton requires a massive 22,500 litres of water to produce. It is a staggering thought that were the water used in India's cotton industry used to provide water for the population, there would currently be no significant water shortage in many parts of the country. The story in India is similar to the story in China and Bangladesh, where our insatiable appetite for cheap designer clothes is putting untold pressure on water and biodiversity. So, what can we do? Here are 5 steps to sensible clothes buying. 1. Buy second-hand. In 2019, I purchased 4 Hollister t-shirts, an Armani jacket, 2 Nike shorts and an Adidas sports shirt for a saving of about £300 on the retail price. 2. Buy ethical. If you can afford the premium, there are an increasing number of retailers who source their clothes ethically. 3. Pass it on. There is a growing market for free or nearly free unwanted clothes. Beyond the clothing bins in car parks, there are a significant number of online suppliers where you can advertise your unwanted clothes. 4. Buy unbleached. Unbleached cottons are healthier for the environment. Remember that the dyes used in clothes manufacturing often end up in rivers and streams that can kill fish and destroy other aquatic life. And finally, 5. Write to the manufacturers. Clothing firms live or die by their reputation.
Convoy collects cash for hospital. More than 120 tractors took part in a 35-mile fundraising event which raised £10,000 for Hampshire Hospital. Farmers from Hampshire, Wiltshire, Gloucester completed a 6-hour tractor run which took them through several towns and villages, including Hursley, Stockbridge, Winchester and Romsey. Romsey Young Farmers Club staged the event in aid of Southampton General Hospital. Southampton Hospital Charity is aiming to buy a 4,500 machine that mimics a cough, which helps unblock the airways of the lungs. The main photo was taken on the A30 just outside Stockbridge by Harry Emery, and it's a picture of the Central Green Reservation with loads, well, 120 tractors, some of them 3 abreast, some of them 4 abreast, and it goes on for ages. It's amazing.
And this is a it's a wonderful photograph, so I'll try and describe it to you. But it's the little article is called "Preparing to Ring Out the Old Decade and Bring in the New." Tower Captain Nick Bucknell places the muffles on the Winchester Cathedral bells in preparation for the special peal on New Year's Eve. It's a tradition that stretches back as far as the 17th century. Mr. Bucknell completed the task of fitting leather muffles on one side of the clappers of 14 bells for the traditional ringing out of the old year and this decade, with half-muffled ringing before midnight on New Year's Eve. Then, with the muffles removed, the bells rang out in full voice, marking the start of 2020 and a new decade. And the photograph is taken up in the bell tower, where Nick Bucknell is working with the bells, which, of course, are inverted, and he's putting these leather muffles, I suppose, attaching them to the head of the clappers. So it's a magnificent view.
Tesco shoppers donate for meals. Thousands of meals have been donated to food banks and groups feeding people, thanks to the generosity of Hampshire shoppers. Tesco customers donated 57,138 meals as part of the overall total of 2.5 million meals donated to charities, the Trussell Trust and Fair Share, during last month's Tesco food collection, with the chain topping up the value of all the donations by an additional 20%. The donations to food banks are being used to provide food parcels for people in crisis, while donations to Fair Share go to charities and community groups such as homeless shelters and older people's lunch clubs, who also receive surplus food from Tesco stores. The donations from the three-day collection are in addition to items given by customers throughout 2019. In the year to October, more than 7 million meals were donated to food banks.
Firefighters released dog trapped in fence. A dog which got its paw stuck in a piece of mesh had to be rescued by the fire service. 11-month-old crossbreed Gizmo became trapped whilst out for a walk with his owner on St Catherine's Hill, Winchester, last Thursday morning. His paw was snared in the mesh fence between the steps and a fire crew spent over an hour tending to the canine. Mildmay vets were also called in, but a spokesman for the fire service said that no further treatment was needed. And there's a lovely picture of Gizmo, not looking at all repentant for having called out the fire service. He's white and black, very scruffy, fluffy-looking dog.
And we've now got funding for three schemes. Thousands of pounds have been approved by civic chiefs to be spent on improving projects throughout the district. At a cabinet meeting of Winchester City Council, £835,000 was given the go-ahead to be spent on three schemes. In a report presented by Councillor Martin Todd, Cabinet Member for Service Quality and Transformation, it details that an extra £350,000 is needed for the Derngate Flood Relief Scheme. Excuse me. It states, due to increasing complexity as the scheme is developed, notably that it now qualifies as a reservoir under the Reservoirs Act, the overall estimated cost of the scheme has increased to up to £1.6 million from the approved budget of £1.35 million. However, the Council has stated that a grant from the Environment Agency has been secured, which will allow for the extra. The meeting was also told that £350,000 is needed to be spent on improving the Chessel multi-storey car park, including waterproofing and resurfacing levels 9 and 10, and that will cost approximately £250,000. It was also said that £40,000 will be used to refurbish the ground floor toilet and £60,000 for replacement of the fire doors throughout. Council has approved £135,000 of community infrastructure levy money, which are contributions from developers, to improve the Chilcombe Sports Ground Pavilion. The pavilion was acquired by Hampshire County Council in 2019, with works anticipated to begin early this year. The approval for funds came as council chiefs were criticised by opposition Conservative councillor Caroline Brooke. She said, 9 months in power and I see nothing really achieved at all apart from a climate emergency declaration. It seems you have been resting on your laurels rather than looking for creative ways to generate that money, meaning that any grants would be a bonus rather than a necessity. I've heard this administration blame everything on the government or other councils to make cheap political shots. Using political excuses for their lack of progress, how much has your inactivity cost this council? Councillor Brooke detailed a list of projects which she considered that the council had made a lack of progress on. However, Cabinet Member for Finance and Risk, Councillor Neil Cutler, swiped back, saying some of the investments made by the Tories were actually costing the authority money. He said, "There is delusion that this council will make huge amounts of revenue by borrowing money and investing it for returns has proved that at the moment the strategic asset purchase scheme is costing this council revenue. And this is accompanied by some photographs, one of the Cheswell multi-storey car park showing a rather poor state of the road surface, and of Durngate Terrace, which is part of the area for the flood relief programme, and Liberal Democrat Martin Todd, and the lady who was criticising them, Conservative candidate or Conservative councillor, Caroline Brooke.
Bubbly crowds at annual wine event. The 6th annual wine festival, Winchester, welcomed more people than ever through the doors of the Guildhall, raising more than £2,500 for charity. It was our busiest night opening session, our busiest Friday night opening session ever, said festival co-director Claire Quigley Ward of the sellout event. The festival continues to grow and we're very grateful not only to everyone who comes along to support and join in the fun, but also our exhibitors and sponsors, without whom the event wouldn't happen. More than £2,500 was raised for the Rose Road Association, which provides emergency respite care for profoundly disabled children and young adults across Hampshire. To date, the festival has raised more than £16,500 for good causes. Major sponsors include Rathbones, The Myers Touch, Hilden, Thursday, Dutton Gregory Solicitors, Stowe Family Law, Hotel du Vin, P, and the BID. And there's a lot of photographs, obviously, of people drinking wine, but an awful lot of them, and looking, as it says, bubbly, very happy. Obviously a great success.
City remains among the least affordable. Winchester has been included in the list of least affordable cities in England, ranking for the number of years needed to save for a deposit, according to a new research. The figures from digital wealth manager Nutmeg find the dream of home ownership is an average of 4.8 years away for aspiring homeowners, but in Winchester it takes an average of 8.5 to save for the 10% deposit. Hereford, St Ives and Luton are the places that equal the overall average, where an individual first-time buyer will take 4.8 years to put away enough money for a 10% deposit. This number rises to over 9 years in two of the least affordable cities, London and Guildford, followed by Cambridge, Winchester and Oxford, where it would take over 8 years on average to get remotely close to getting on the property ladder. Some of the more affordable cities include Leicester, Manchester and Sheffield, where it takes an average of 3.5 years. Lisa Kaplan, Nutmeg's head of financial advice, said, "Many people dream of owning their first home, and we know that a house is the top of the investment goal for Nutmeg customers, but it can seem unachievable. However, by putting some money away each month and making the most of the government top-up available through a lifetime ISA, your aspirations for home ownership might be closer than you think." And there is a picture of, obviously from St Catherine's Hill, of Winchester.
And a World War II air base is going to host a talk on the Luftwaffe. The story of the Luftwaffe will come alive in an illustrated talk at the Army Flying Museum at Middle Wallop next week. Broadcaster, journalist and historian Paul Beaver will take to the stage at the museum near Stockbridge to tell the story of the Luftwaffe's last big day, and that will be from 7 p.m. on Wednesday, the 8th of January. "The Luftwaffe remains a subject of fascination for young and old," said Mr. Beaver. "It has always intrigued me why it didn't succeed when it had so many advantages. Hitler's mighty Luftwaffe was a shadow of its former self by the end of 1944. The campaign on three fronts had sapped it of skilled pilots, the bombing campaign had reduced the fuel available, and the factories could not produce enough aero engines. Despite the advent of the jet fighter and other developments, the Luftwaffe was doomed. Hermann Göring planned one last throw of the dice, which Mr. Beaver will recount as he traces the German Air Force from 1933 to 1945. A curry supper is also available from the Apache Cafe at 6 p.m., advance booking only. And Mittewalp is an apt location for the talk, as it was a major base for the RAF fighting the Luftwaffe during the Battle of Britain in 1940. Then, as now, it is the largest grass airfield in the UK. And this article is accompanied by a photograph showing some Luftwaffe pilots with their Messerschmitt ME-262 jets during the latter stages of World War II.
Tribute to Shining Star after fatal crash. The family of a caring and compassionate Tottenham man who died in a crash near Winchester say they are utterly heartbroken by his death. Harry James Turner, 29, of Jacob's Gutter Lane, Totten, died when his white Vauxhall Insignia collided with a tree on Longwood Road, Ossilbury, just after midnight on December the 17th. The family of Mr. Turner have paid tribute to him. In a statement released by the police, they said, "In the early hours of Tuesday, December the 17th, our dearly loved son Harry was involved in a fatal car accident. His death has left the whole family utterly heartbroken, and we cannot find the words to express the pain we feel. Harry was a very outgoing, passionate young man and lived his life to the full, making many friends along the way. Anyone that knew Harry will remember his caring, compassionate personality and his unique sense of humour. Our shining star will be deeply missed by all those who knew him. Harry will forever have a place in our hearts, and his memory will live on through us all as a beloved son, brother, proud uncle and friend. We'd like to say thank you for the love and support we have received from those close to us, but at this early stage, we kindly request we are allowed to grieve in private during this difficult time. Investigations into the exact circumstances of the collision are ongoing."
It's appalling. Criticism as M27 work hit with delay. Local people have criticised Highways England after it was announced work on the M27 will be delayed. Work on the £90 million Romsey Road Bridge project was due from Friday, January the 10th until January the 13th, forewarning drivers on the 55-mile detour. Highways England has revealed the final stage of the project will not begin until 10 p.m. on Friday, January the 31st, due to issues with their supply chain. Romsey Town Centre manager Mark Edgersley said, "I think it's appalling as we have spent a lot of effort already publicising the date so people can make arrangements and they have not done the courtesy of telling us about the changes. I am angry about this and we should not have to ask for this information, which I saw posted on Facebook by Peter Spears, the Romsey Chamber of Commerce president. It is nonsense and we have not got much time to tell people about this. We will do our best and we will have to take it on the chin, but they should have given us a chance." He added, "At one stage of the works, Highways England were planning to do it on the Beggars Fair weekend, and that would have been a disaster." Councillor Nick Adams-King, who represents Blackwater on the Borough Council, said, "It is really disappointing because Highways England have been very good at keeping people informed, but they are making changes like this at such short notice. We have all communicated with residents to tell people what is happening, and here we are having to do it again, which is silly. I completely agree with Mark that Highways England could have done a better job and makes communicating with people more difficult. It's not surprising they're behind with the work because of all the rain we've had. It also makes it much harder for people to plan things." Councillor Janet Burnage, who represents Romsey Cooperham on the Borough Council, said, "It is a very poor. There was no apologies from Highways England, as they have just made a change without letting us know. Romsey in particular was most affected by the previous closure, and they could certainly have emailed the Town Council and the Borough Council to let them know about the changes which were taking place." A spokesman from Highways England said, "The date has changed to January the 31st due to issues with our supply chain. Letters are being sent shortly to inform residents and stakeholders accordingly. The work on the M27 is set to finish at 5 a.m. on Monday, February the 3rd. As previously reported, the 55-mile detour will see eastbound traffic leaving the M27 at Hour and go through Romsey before joining the M3 near Winchester. The third and final closure will take place between 10 p.m. on Friday, January the 10th, and 5 a.m. on January the 13th. The M27, used by 140,000 vehicles a day, will once again be shut in both directions between junctions 3 and 4.
Cafe disposal to stem the loss of council money. Changes are afoot for a council-run cafe that's been operating at a loss for a number of years. 1871, housed within the Guildhall, was opened in 2010, and in recent times it's seen a fall in customers and a drop in profits. Now, in a bid to balance the budget, the authority has now decided to cut ties with the operation and lease the premises to an external company. Civic chiefs have approved spending £130,000 to convert the space into a self-contained unit, with six providers said to be interested. The names of the businesses who have shown interest have not been made public. Speaking during a cabinet meeting, Councillor Kelsey Learney, Member for Housing and Asset Management, has said that the Guildhall has been operating at a loss for a considerable period of time, and the cafe operations form a considerable part of that loss. She added, "It has become clear that even just closing the cafe would create a considerable saving, but clearly leaving a dead space in such a prominent location would not be a very sensible decision or good for the city. However, by separating out the cafe unit from the Guildhall, we have the opportunity to let it out separately, with the cost of those renovations being recovered relatively quickly. Having tested the market, there is a strong interest in taking over the unit, in particular from local providers. To do so will allow the cafe operation to be entirely divorced from the Guildhall itself, with no need to keep the whole building open to simply access the toilets from the cafe. However, the closure will put three jobs at risk, with the roles being put up for redundancy when the cafe ceases trading on April the 1st. As part of the plan, council bosses said it will work with organisations who use the unit as a meeting space. Councillor Learney said, "We're aware that a number of groups operate informally out of the cafe, using it as a social meeting space, and we're looking at how we can help those groups do the same thing somewhere else." And Councillor Steve Miller, Conservative member, added, "We've tried various times to make it more efficient and not lose so much money. Unfortunately, they failed, so fully support this. Let's get on and get it done. The long-term operation of the Guildhall will be looked into at a later stage in an attempt to look at how the council can make money from the historic building. 1871 is in a prominent location in the summer, with the influx of visitors being dropped off by coaches on the Broadway. But for a large part of the year, it is away from the central hub of the city and the city centre, further along the High Street." And this is accompanied by a photograph of the 1871 cafe at Winchester Guildhall, which I can assure you has served some wonderful tea and cakes.
Organ donation. NHS Blood and Transplant is urging people in Hampshire to talk about donating their organs. The call comes as it launches a TV advertising campaign to highlight the upcoming changes to the law around organ donation in England. From spring 2020, all adults will be considered to have agreed to donate their own organs when they die, unless they record a decision not to donate or in one of the excluded groups. Excluded groups will include those under the age of 18, people who lack the mental capacity to understand the new arrangements and take the necessary action, visitors to England, and those not living here voluntarily, and people who have lived in England for less than 12 months before their death. The campaign aims to motivate people across England to pass it on by either making the decision to pass on their organs to save lives passing on their decision to family and friends, or passing on information about the law change to other people. Anthony Clarkson, Director of Organ Donation and Transplantation for NHS Blood and Transplant, said, "Christmas is an incredibly busy time of year. However, it should also be a time for family and thinking of others. We want everyone to know the law around organ donation is changing, to understand how it is changing and the choices available to them. We want them to make their organ donation decision and whatever that decision is, to share it with their family."
Ted Fox left outside TV presenter's home. Wildlife TV presenter Chris Packham has said a dead fox has been left outside his house. A prominent anti-fox hunting and anti-animal cruelty campaigner, Mr. Packham posted a video on Twitter saying that he found the animal in the yard outside his New Forest home on Monday. The Springwatch presenter said in his tweet, "It appears that if you oppose the cruelty and illegality of fox hunting and those who club them to death, you don't just get social media abuse." The video showed the animal in his driveway with a large dark mark around its body, something Mr. Packham called a snare injury. Mr. Packham called the animal beautiful and added, "It seems that if you stick up for foxes, you get your comeuppance from people who still think it's a good idea to kill them."
Thank you. That concludes the extracts for this week. So thank you to our editors, Linda Vincent and me. Thanks to our copying and dispatch and memory stick preparation teams. And of course, thanks to our readers, Nikki Baring.
Goodbye.
Norma York.
Goodbye.
And Andrew Parkinson.
Goodbye.
And from me, Keith Vincent, goodbye. And do have an enjoyable week. And when you finish with this week's recording, please put the memory stick back in the wallet and return it as soon as possible, placing the address label inside the wallet. Thank you.